Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. Just start the music. Radio yet. I'm crazy, I tell you, crazy day. Okay, from I guess Spook Show, I don't know, here to talk to you today about all kinds of stuff, but mostly a topic: practical special effects. You know, the stuff that's sort of made by hand. It's no kind of special composites or optical effects or green screening or stop motion animation. No, the stuff that's equally as clever special effects folks, either due to necessity or just out-and-out creativity, have created, made for our viewing pleasures in these genres of horror, science fiction, and fantasy movies. Okay? we got some folks already listening in. Carl the Ghoul, blah, blah. Space Pirate, Evil Annie Repper, thanks for tuning in and listening, and already some chit-chat going on. Space Pirate wants to talk about scary technology, like trying to log on to Blog Talk. Yeah, it's challenging sometimes. I don't know, for the money I pay for this thing, you think they'd give my listeners the very best. What are you going to do? Hey, if you want to talk to me about this stuff, all right, it's a good topic. 646-378-0264. And you can talk right here, live and stuff. Sorry. A little lung darkening there. It's all right. It gives you timbre to your voice. Hey, if it worked for Ernie Anderson, if it worked for Fritz the Night Owl, it'll work for me too eventually. Yeah, Gar the Ghoul brought out some great stuff that I'll be bringing up, like the prosthetics and other effects, even just the makeup effects of Lon Chaney Sr. Costuming. There's just so many aspects of doing practical effects, and where better to start than at the very, very beginning? When you got guys like George Méliès. Well, he was the only guy like George Méliès that's really the grandfather of special effects. Now, many of his effects were optical in nature or trick photography, as it were. But being a magician, many of his effects had practical aspects to them, such as making somebody disappear through a trap door and a puff of smoke. Underneath the stage, rather. Many of the early silent films were shot on a stage, much like an auditorium. In fact, some of them were auditoriums. There's a great version of Alice in Wonderland. And all those silent films, or many of them, that dealt with the unusual or some action adventure where you needed something fantastic to happen without injuring or harming your actors and actresses, then, you know, that's practical effects. That's where it's necessary. Absolutely. Per Gar's suggestion, I did want to bring up Lon Chaney Sr. Tied himself up in harnesses early in his career, playing crippled actors or legless actors, and sometimes armless actors as well. He would bind himself. And at times, they had to restrict the amount of time he could bind himself because of loss of circulation to his extremities. And there's a guy who will suffer for his art. Even in the comedies back in the silent days, oh gosh, when you look at Buster Keaton, some of the stuff he did, there's one film, and I forget the name of it, but the effect was standing in front of a falling building. And he actually measured everything out and had a wall fall on him, except that it fell in such a way that the upper floor window fell right over him where he didn't get injured. And it was a live take, no stuntmen, no special effects, no special hatchway escape underground. I mean, Buster Keaton did that, and he had a lot of guts. And in the early days, again, those were absolutely necessary. When you look at guys like Chaney and Jack Pierce, they created such fantastic monsters and even just actors with extreme features. They were just amazing. And Chaney in particular, with the suffering that he did, putting screws in his face and just torturing his body to make these practical effects. Now, many later years, sometimes you wonder why practical effects were used when CGI and things were available. And a very good example is, and I hate to bring it up this early in the show, quite frankly, but I just can't wait to talk about it, is probably one of the very best practical effects movies, especially in the modern era. And that's The Thing, John Carpenter's version of The Thing. Just so many parts of it. I don't believe there was any CGI or any kind of optical or composite type effects used in the film other than the space travel at the very, very beginning. But it really wasn't necessary. It was a great story told in an enclosed environment. And so the monsters were, you know, the aliens, as they morphed into the various things they morphed into, dogs, or part dogs and part alien. These were done by robots and pneumatically controlled puppets, and such great effects. One of the greatest scenes to my mind in that film is when they tried to shock one of the actors back to life, and his chest opens up and bites a guy's arms off. Shortly after that, the guy's head stretches and falls off to the ground and turns into a spider. Just a series of great special effects. When the head drags itself, it shoots its tongue out. And that was filmed, another clever usage there was filming backwards so that the tongue would accurately hit its target. There were just so many things done that were so cool. The stretching skin in the scene where the guy's head falls off, they actually used bubble yum for that. It had the right consistency and the right color under the lights to look like skin, and so that was used on the special effects pieces. There was just so much creative genius in that film. And it really, really is one of the best. Some of the worst. Oh, let's not even talk about Howard the Duck. I'm still trying to pretend that movie never happened. But there's other films like that. You just wonder why did you do that? The Terminator has a great example. A very, very good film that, although it did use CGI, there were a lot of practical effects, but one of the bad ones, unfortunately, if you'll remember the scene where the Terminator robot, Arnold Schwarzenegger, is repairing himself, the arm sequence wasn't too bad, but the eye, it was obvious it was a dummy's head. There's several examples of things like that where the a dummy was used, and you just wonder why. It makes you wonder, were they drunk making the film?
Make me a Sergeant Jackson food.
You just never know. if you have some films that you want to discuss that use practical effects, call 646-378-0264 and dial carefully. Oh my gosh, Gar the Ghoul's gone crazy in the chat room. He mentions another film I wanted to bring up that had very, very, very good practical effects, and that's the remake of The Fly, the Goldblum. The original was very good, great mask, but the sequence of metamorphoses that Jeff Goldblum went through when he turned into Brindlefly, were really well done and kind of unusual. Hadn't been seen that way before. Many of these films were inspired by yet another superb, maybe to my mind, perhaps the second best practical effects film was Alien. In addition to the giant alien creature with the head within the head, that was a neat effect, right? In addition to that, the chest bursting scene with the and the face hugger, those were great effects. Some animal parts and organs were used, and some were manufactured, guts and spleens, so forth. So Aliens from 1979, or Alien, the initial one, was, I think, a great inspiration to filmmakers in using practical effects very effectively. Gosh, even the scene where the android's head was disconnected and laying on the floor, apparently. Very, very well done. Okay, Gar the Ghoul is asking, the use of green screen in early films is crazy. With spiders, lizards, blah, blah, blah. Blah, blah, in his language. Meant to be huge with live characters in the foreground. Was that edited or without the use of screen? Was it maybe split screen? No, actually, a lot of that was, very often it was green, rear screen projection. That was a process, another brilliant process of the day that was necessary when you had giant people or giant animals is having a giant screen behind the actors, and the actors would react to those. That was some of the effects. Some of it was split screening, I believe. And then they had something called a traveling mat that would pick up a certain character or a certain image in a series of photographs in the film. And very similar to green screen, it would pick it up and then mix it with another piece of film. And that's basically what compositing is. And that's kind of more of an optical effect. So the old films, too, they did a combination of practical effects as well as using the green screen and rear screen projection. Oftentimes they would mix use of practical effects with them. You'd have, like as in Earth versus the Spider, in addition to the traveling mat type effects and the rear screen projection, they also had some close-ups. They had limbs and great large parts of the giant spider, especially in the gym sequence of Earth versus the Spider. So many effects were a combination. Another modern film, a very good film, had a brilliant use mix of CGI and practical effects, was Jurassic Park. In addition to, you know, the great, beautiful Diplodocus scenes, they had a T-Rex. Well, they also had a giant animatronic T-Rex, as well as, I think it was a Triceratops was sick laying on its side, and the doctors were checking it out with a big, huge breathing bladder to make it look real. And those were very realistic. In fact, even more so, I think, because you could tell it's shot in real time rather than a computer animated image. Just some sense of more realism, I think, with your practical effects. So mixing them that way, I thought was brilliant usage in Jurassic Park. I think a lot of films, even the Star Wars series. When you have a great mask maker or makeup person, it really gives you the opportunity to do many, many, many things. I've often mentioned how one of the greatest films to usher in the modern era of science fiction films was Planet of the Apes, and their use of masks was absolutely fantastic, which lent itself to it, as well as being inspired by famous monsters of filmland. You got to give a nod to Rick Baker. On this show and its predecessor, you've probably heard me talk a lot about the Dino De Laurentiis King Kong. I'm going to talk about that in just a minute, right after this message. This message coming up right here. Okay, thanks, Blog Talk. You're really helping out here. The soundboard is gone berserk, folks.
I was a teenage werewolf, the most terrifying picture of our time. I was a teenage werewolf, fantastic, bewildering, a motion picture to stand beside the greatest horror stories of all time. I was a teenage werewolf.
Ooh, another great practical effects film. Again, wonderful makeup effect. In fact, the films, I was a teenage werewolf and I was a teenage Frankenstein. I found both of them quite scary in the 60s when I grew up, the first time I saw them. But there was another film called How to Make a Monster, starring both of those monsters that I didn't get to see much until much later into my adult life. And it was kind of fun because it was about a special effects makeup guy losing his job due to a studio takeover, and he kind of snaps and reawakens the monsters. It's pretty cool. If you've never seen How to Make a Monster, it's a lot of fun, and there's some special color footage at the end. Ooh, bonus! That was a thrill in the days of black and white to have a little color piece in your film. More gimmickry, but maybe not as well thought out as some of the practical effects that we've seen. Before the little break there, the little teenage werewolf commercial, I mentioned, what did I mention? Good, I wasn't paying attention either. No, I was talking about the Dino De Laurentiis King Kong and how I've always disliked the film, but I have to be honest, I was impressed by Rick Baker's use of his masks. In fact, I felt that was the only watchable parts were the close-ups of his mask and the human-sized gorilla suit, and the actor's portrayal underneath of King Kong was probably the most watchable and best part. Even in the original King Kong, in addition to the mats that they used, as well as other techniques to mix the animated models with the live actors, many practical effects were used there. There was a giant, life-size King Kong's head that was used in the classic biting the native scene, and just close-ups of him admiring Fay Wray. Plus the giant hand that was made for both films. Obviously a far more modern one in the De Laurentiis version. That hand was very well done, but unfortunately, in my mind, it's one of the worst practical effects of all time, was the giant 50-foot electronic King Kong that was made, that was used for all of maybe 8-9 seconds in the movie, and perhaps one of the greatest financial wastes of all time on a single shot, I thought. And just not a very good impact. But, again, in the original, they had a controlled hand run by many... many studio hands to grab Fay Wray for the close-ups. I'd love it if one of you, Space Pirate, Gar the Ghoul, Evil Annie Repert, give a call. I want to hear your opinions. At least I can see lots of Gars. He's typing away, and Space Pirate brought up a great point here in the chat, that human faces are the hardest to duplicate, either CGI or practical. That is absolutely true. Haven't you seen those movies where they put a dummy's head in place of an actor for a particular scene, a particular special effects scene, whether it's a beheading or the removal of an eye or something like that? You could just tell when it's not done well, and it looks real bad. Trying to think of the name of the film where practical effects were used very poorly. There was one, I can't remember the name of it, but the guy's head shrinks. It looks like a deflating balloon. It was a horrible effect. But at the same time, you got movies like Scanners. Now there's a practical effect film for you. the exploding head. I don't know if you're watching along, those of you watching, participating in the chat, if you're listening live on the website, you can see the pictures going by. I just wasn't going to put big-time gory stuff up there, but you get the picture from scanners. That was an amazing effect that was done. There's places you can look and see how those effects were done. This one, I forget what they filled the head with, but it was actually blown up with a shotgun. Must be fun making those things. You get to play with a little bit of boom booms and at the same time know that you're horrifying your audience. That's pretty cool. Nope, got to pay the bills. Time for a commercial. I'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. I'll be here.
Men who know tobacco best. It's Lucky's 2-to-1. LSMFT. LSMFT.
You said it.
Lucky Strike means fine tobacco, so round, so firm, so fully packed. So free and easy on the draw.
Less than ironically, as the commercial talked about, so round, so firm, so fully packed, my big fat great kitty joins me as usual here on Erie House Radio. Tonight on Erie House Television, got some stuff for you to watch, folks. Get over to the channel if you've never been there. Just go to my Facebook page, the Erie House Facebook page, and there's links to get in there. Tonight at 8, it's weird, 8 Eastern, it's weirdly... Wee wee bad, as Elmer Fudd would say. No, weirdness, really bad movie with Moon of the Wolf, and 10 o'clock, some clown named Dale Kay with Mad Monster. As we continue with werewolves all weekend long, we had Rigor Mortis last night, as well as Wild Thingdom, with the films Werewolf in a Girl's Dormitory and Face of the Screaming Werewolf, and that was last night. We'll be rebroadcasting the schedule all weekend long at varying times, so if you know the sequence or if you've logged onto the webpage and seen the schedule, it's going to keep repeating. We have a caller, which I shall take right now. Hello, caller, and welcome to Erie House Radio.
Blah, blah, and hello to you.
It is I,
Carl.
Yes.
I was going to say, hi, who is this?
Ooh, hi, how high?
How high are you? I mean, how?
I art well. I paint with art. I art paint. I don't know. So we're talking about
art
special effects and the lack thereof, right?
Well, not so much the lack thereof. I like films that make good use of practical effects. You know, not the special effects where you get in the camera and get into the electronics and all that stuff. No,
one of the things that has made horror so much fun is actually the practical effects. In that, if you ever see the zipper in the back of the monster's head, you're going, "Yeah, I'm scared now."
Yeah,
and that's practical.
True,
but they were. You move forward with the premise, you know, and just have fun with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's to your point, when you see, let's say, the killer shrews and you realize that's just a dog wearing a rug.
That's right.
It does make it a lot of fun.
Recycled later for political platforms. No, I guess, I don't know.
Rugs. Wait, do you have a favorite film, Gar, that made use of practical effects, or what would one of your favorites be?
I do, and it's one of, I don't know if everyone has this film. I have this film, and I think a lot of people that do have enjoy horror genre films have one film where they were really young, and maybe it was the first one they ever saw, or second or third, and it scared the boo-boo out of you. But mine was the, I want to say it's longer than it really is, The Incredible Hideous Sun Demon.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Now, with that one, you could see the zipper in the back, but when I saw it as a kid, I saw no zipper.
Well, you're not supposed to see zippers when you're a kid.
Right. And then there was that one point, spoiler alert for those who've never seen the film, where the antagonistic creature, sun demon, whatever, is launched off that tall platform. And even though, in looking at it in hindsight, as an adult with older eyes, you can tell it's a dummy, I was flabbergasted, I guess, as a little kid to see, oh my gosh, they shot him and he fell off that tower. That one got me. That one really did. Another one
I
that... Go ahead.
No, okay. You first, sir.
Okay. Another one that got me was, there's a Hammer film. I wish I could... I can't remember the name. I can describe it slightly. And... I want to say Christopher Lee was in it. The main character, the antagonist bad guy, is drawn and quartered at the beginning of the film. And I was like, ooh! They used a dummy, but they show you that, and I was like, whoa! What? That was crazy.
Yeah. It's funny you bring that up, because sometimes a bad dummy can ruin an otherwise well-intentioned, you know,
right.
Here's a good example, and it's a very, very good film. Otherwise, is I believe it's the first of the Friday the 13th movies, and at the end, you it seems that Freddy has been vanquished, and it's almost like the ending of Carrie, where it's everything's nice, and you're building up. Something's going to happen here. Wait a second.
Right.
And there's a scene where the heroine's mother. Or is that heroine? I don't know. The female
heroine.
Stars. Yes. Her mother's, you know, the star's mother is grabbed by Freddy and pulled through a window. And they used a very, very bad dummy. And it was really obvious when he pulled her through the window. And it was such, it almost ruined it. It did a little, but it almost completely ruined an otherwise very frightening moment.
I don't know what happened to me in my life, but for some reason, by the time Freddy rolled around, I did not watch the Freddy sequels, all of that. I didn't see them until decades later, and I was like, this is just gruesome. So I never saw it. But one curiosity of that is you have to figure so much time has elapsed, and the opportunity to get a good dummy definitely was there, and yet they failed on that one, huh?
Yeah. It's too bad.
I mean, I'm sure they had good dummies by then.
You know, normally at this time, I'd be preparing to say goodbye to our regular listeners, but if you will have us, regular listeners, we have got some bonus live time going on today, so stick around with me and Gar, as long as he'll stay with us, and we'll just chat a little while longer live on the air. Does that sound cool?
It sounds so cool. Yeah, speaking of practical applications of affections, I'm waiting for my face to dry, and that's the only reason I can call in, because, you know, it's kind of like my hair is not dry, I can't go anywhere. Well, my face is wet, and I can't go anywhere. waiting for the practical effects of makeup to take its course.
There you go. And again, much as we discussed, you in the chat, me on the air, about Lon Chaney and gosh, guys like Jack Pierce, the folks who worked on makeup.
All his stuff he did. The attention to detail that they did with a human face in order to get it to be all made up is just amazing. I don't have that much.
Special, you'll find a lot of special effects guys are now, you know, especially the ones that are going to college, the young ones, because everybody has to go to college these
right.
days. They do study anatomy. You know, Ray Harryhausen, with his great stop-motion animation, did a lot of study of the anatomy of dinosaurs to have his models made, you know, anatomically correct, so to speak, or as correct as we believe them to have been from the fossil record. And in doing so, added an even greater depth of realism outside of just, you know, using the stop-motion animation effects.
As close to a Ken doll as possible, right?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Boy, sometimes I feel like a Ken doll, but that's never good. That
that's a whole other
good.
Discussion right there.
Yeah.
I really did enjoy practical applications in so many of the films. They made the creatures and the characters seem like, okay, I can dig it. I can accept it, and it's real enough to go, whoa, that's scary.
Yep. Yeah, I like, I guess you could lump in animal trainers and bug ranchers, they call them.
Oh, right. Yeah, for all the...
I think you have to lump that in there, too, because that's a very, 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 very practical effect to use actual spiders and centipedes and things like that in films that use them, in, like the Indiana Jones movies and so forth.
Right. If I was an actor, which I don't know if I'm an actor or not,
Sure you are.
I don't know if I'd be down with bugs crawling on me. I don't know if I could.
Yeah.
If I could stomach the notion. Like
does it cover this
and stuff? I'd be like, I don't know, guys.
That's I have to admit, that's also a weak suit of mine is having big giant bugs crawling on you.
I think I'd be the guy with plastic bugs glued to him, running around screaming with a fork trying to put a fire out or something. I don't know.
There you go. But oh gosh, how many films like Creepshow and so many films where they've used bug ranchers to. And again, the Indiana Jones films seem to like to use those, or where snakes and. Now, one thing I did not like, and I would assume most of my listeners, I know Evil Annie's an animal person, is I don't like when they were gluing the fins on the lizards and things. And
oh, right.
They actually encouraged, like in 1 million BC, a small caiman or crocodile-type creature to fight with a large iguana, and, you know, that, of course, can't be done today. There's laws against that, their kind of misuse and abuse of animals, and I did not go for that. Number one, I didn't like it even as a young, foolish lad, because it just seemed mean and unnecessary. There were, you know, better ways to get that across, and there's other films that very successfully, another thing that we haven't discussed is the use of puppetry.
Oh, yep.
Dinosaurus, that was such a fun film, and sometimes the puppets looked a little on the fakey side, but...
Reptilicus!
Yeah,
that
there you
is
go,
like,
there's
whoa,
another one.
Bad. Reptilicus. It was a string marionette dragon or something?
Yes.
That one.
I have a special place for that film in my heart, because it was... one that was shown often, and I got to see it often as a kid. It was on Superhost. It was on Unhosted a few times, and I liked Reptilicus. That was a neat film.
And one last kudo to Reptilicus is it was even used in the 1960s little sitcom The Monkees in one of their...
Yes, it was.
It was, and I was like, whoa, was that Reptilicus? What's it doing on The Monkees?
Unfortunately, that fight, the lizard fight scene that I referenced just a few moments ago, unfortunately, that was used in a lot of films. I believe it was reused
like over and
in
over, recycled?
It was reused in the 1960 The Lost World. It was reused in a few films, and very unfortunate. Like I said, that I believe the animals actually got hurt pretty badly in the filming of those, and I don't go for that kind of stuff.
Do you recall the Bill Murray holiday treat called Scrooged?
Yes.
There's a scene in there where the guy is holding a mouse, and he's got these little antlers, and he's saying, "The glue won't stick." And Bill Murray says, "Have you tried a stapler?" It was like, oh, no. Yeah, but that was comedy, and there were no mice hurt or injured in that film that I know of.
There better not be. Let's have another promotional announcement.
Ladies and gentlemen, poison doesn't always come in bottles, and it isn't always marked with the skull and crossbones of danger. Poison can take the form of words and phrases and acts, the venom of racial and religious hatred. Here in the United States, perhaps more than ever before, we must learn to recognize the poison of prejudice and to discover the antidote to its dangerous effects. Evidences of racial and religious hatred in our country place a potent weapon in the hands of our enemies, providing them with the ammunition of criticism. Moreover, group hatred menaces the entire fabric of democratic life. As for the antidote, you can fight prejudice, first by recognizing it for what it is, and second by actively accepting or rejecting people on their individual worth, and by speaking up against prejudice and for understanding. Remember, freedom and prejudice can't exist side by side. If you choose freedom, fight prejudice.
Well said, Vincent.
I tell you, a lot of incidents can be offset if someone just sat there and said what they were going to say once they were riled up three times in their head and then decided against saying it.
Boy, ain't that the truth.
Did you say that three times?
That's right.
Boy,
yeah,
ain't that,
three times. There.
Boy, ain't that the truth. Boy, yeah, I could say that. Just evaluate your language and choice and timing and all that. Because many comedic opportunities are lost because people don't do that. Hey.
You know it. What would you say your best... You mentioned your favorite film. What would you say is artistically the best practical effect movie that you can think of?
Okay. Right off the hand, I'm going to say it was one of those Harry Hiffenhauer, that guy. The Sinbad films. I saw those as a kid, and they animated the skeletons in it, and it was just... Whoa, they had so many monsters in there, too.
Yeah. I personally kind of am lumping those out because those are composite-type films where they use optical effects to mix the animated. The process of the animation, absolutely, that's as practical as you can get it. I love Ray Harryhausen. I will stop. If there's one of his films on TV, I'll stop dead in my tracks and just watch it. The house could be on fire, and I'm going to sit down and watch Ray Harryhausen.
I think
of
like
the flames.
The DVD collection of all those. They're great. I love them. Yeah.
Oh, it's serious special effects eye candy for me. I was inspired at a very, very young age. I mentioned many times I was that kid running around with a Super 8 or Standard 8 camera and a bunch of Play-Doh and making or modeling clay and making dinosaurs come to life and attack the Lionel train sets. And our school had a rear projection screen, so I was able to mix them with live actors. Man, that was a lot of fun. That was a lot of fun, and it kept me out of trouble because it kept my hands busy.
Yeah, I wish I had that the incentive and the knowledge and the access to have done that as a child. Might have steered me in a whole different direction in my life.
Having been an avid reader of 4E's magazine, there were ads for all kinds of things in the magazine, the cool stuff. And because I always had a work ethic, I mean, I've been working since I've been 13 years old, doing all kinds of odd jobs and whatever, because I had to have my comic books and my monsters, you know? So in lieu of facing potential disappointment of your parents saying, no, you can't have that, I'm going to make my own money and buy my own cool stuff.
There you
go. Really, that was the motivating factor at, you know, at age 12, 13, whatever. And so one of the things that was advertised in one of the magazines, and I'm so glad I bought it, I still own it, is a coffee table, what we used to call a coffee table book. It's a softbound edition. It's not a hardbound, but it's called The Making of King Kong.
Oh, okay.
Of, you know, the 1933 version.
Right.
And, oh, my gosh, it opened my eyes not only to how stop-motion animation was done, but all the, if you're just clever enough to come up with something, and, you know, people, sometimes it seems that you wonder about the human race, where we're going, but there still are so many clever people around, and if you give them some time and the resources, they can come up with the most amazing stuff, and some of the things that were created for King Kong, like many of the dinosaur roars, were live animal roars, like a lion played backwards at different, but not only played backwards, but at different speeds, and someone had the wherewithal to listen to it at various speeds. What would a dinosaur sound like? Well, let's do that, you know, and in addition to the optical effects, there was so many practical things, making the models of both the Lost World and in King Kong. The models were made by a gentleman named Marcel Delgado, who, again, studied anatomy. You know, at the time those films were made, a lot of fossil discoveries were being made, and kids were excited about dinosaurs and giant monsters. And Delgado, you know, studied these animals in addition to putting inside an armature or a skeleton, if you will, inside the models. He would put bladders inside to make them breathe.
If they're going to be alive,
you know, make them look like they're breathing, too. And it's just amazing what people will come up with.
There's another funny aspect of what you were talking about as far as the sounds of animals. There's also the inappropriate sounds that, like, in horror movies, if you go and listen to the different sounds people think bats make. Or, I could be wrong here, but for some reason I think in the movie Carnival of Souls, where she goes into this abandoned large building and there's rats.
Yeah.
They come out with this really bizarre sound effect that maybe rats would make, but it sounds more like a barrel of monkeys or something.
Yes. Hey, God, guess what? We've got a caller here at this late time. Someone from the Cleveland area, I think, by the area code. Welcome to Erie House, caller.
Hey, I'd like to order a large pizza with anchovies.
Sure. go away.
You want garlic bread with it?
Yeah, that's right.
Because
Sounds good. Fresh
out of garlic, brother.
Who do we have calling?
Hey, Dale, it's me, Lou.
Hey, Louie.
Well, hello, Louie. Blah, blah to you.
As in screwy Louie?
Yeah, or drunken Louie, with whichever one you want to say.
Ah, from the old alfalfa days. Thank you for calling my radio show. Wow.
Hey, no problem.
Please surprise and transfix what precipitated the phone call, my good man.
I was just intrigued on, you know, I'm late in the conversation, maybe 5-10 minutes. I was washing dishes. But anyway, what have we come up with? What's better, the old style or the new style?
I think the answer to that is yes.
I thought the answer was false.
I think that there's a place for both in the time periods now. I mean, as I look at, like the old Planet of the Apes, I mean, we all knew that those were people in monkey suits.
Mm-hmm.
The new Planet of the Apes, they're more like apes. You know?
On a past show, you were talking about War of the Worlds, and the remake, and Gort, I thought that was horrible what they did. It was all special.
Oh, you mean the day the earth stood still,
Gort,
you mean?
That one, sorry. The day the earth stood still, right.
The remake.
That remake sucked my butt. I'm sorry.
Yeah. The original, I mean, for the time period, the special effects and everything were perfect. You know, matter of fact, I turned on a nephew of mine to watch that movie once, and he's in his 20s or something. He's like, my God, I didn't know that they made movies like this back then.
Yeah. That's half the fun of being old, is turning on young people to some of these old films that were actually good, you know.
Right.
Unfortunately, the horror hosts, we get to show the public domain movies that are generally a piece of crap, with a few exceptions.
Right. Now, the thing is if people want to see something that looks more real, they'll go to the computer, you know. But if you want to see something that's a little bit more, what would you say, cheesy, but based on acting, I go old school.
Yeah, yeah. I have to agree with you. I love the old films because the acting's so superior.
Right.
But
some
of the new
ones
are just
over the top. I mean, they're way too much, you know.
I agree there too. And to fully answer your original question, the reason I answered yes is I think some of the very best films use a conservative mix of both.
Yes.
Great examples, we already brought up Jurassic Park. How about Lord of the Rings? I mean, there was a fine mix of like green screening and and composite type effects along with the CGI, but yet there were many, many good practical effects in the film.
Yeah, exactly. We're at a stage of filmmaking now where you can make a movie like The Hobbit, you know, and have it somewhat believable.
I know. There's one story, and it's not real well known, but they were great sword and sorcery books that I read in the late 70s, early 80s. An author named Michael Moorcock wrote these books about a character named Elric of Melniboné, and it's cool. There's dragons and everything, and a whole mythos to these stories. It's a very dark story with a really depressing ending. Spoiler alert. But I've always wanted someone to commit it to film, and it hasn't been done yet. It would be the way I envisioned the books as I read them. It would truly be an epic along the lines of Lord of the Rings. I mean, it would be that massive of an undertaking. Do it right.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I mean, there are some stories that need time to do it right. I mean,
yeah.
You know, with technology as it's going on, you know, but you know, like your werewolf movies and stuff. I mean, the best one was the old one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With Chaney Senior, Jr. Yep.
Yeah. I mean,
I got one for you.
A werewolf that was believable other than him.
Yeah. Well, the remake was pretty good with Benito del Toro. I did like that. They made him look very, very good. But you brought up an interesting point that reminded me of something. A practical effect that so far has not been remade. Now, they've threatened to remake this movie, and I'm petrified they'll screw it up. But to my mind, it is one of the best costumes of all time. And, of course, I'm talking about the creature from the Black Lagoon.
Yeah.
What an amazing costume that was.
Oh, that movie scared the shit out of me when I was a kid. Oh, can we say shit online?
No, we can't.
As a scuba diver, as an ex-scuba diver, that film, that was an amazing film. However, I don't know how they filmed that without the guy drowning. That was amazing.
Because they actually used a skin/scuba diver named Riku Browning.
Yep.
Who could hold his breath for great periods of time.
Right.
You know, they had that amazing costume, so realistic. You know, the story, it wasn't the greatest, but it wasn't the worst. I'm just afraid they're going to politicize the hell out of it, and that's going to ruin
sure.
it for me. I don't mind if you get a little sappy about not abusing, you know, this new animal type. That's fine, and that's to be expected.
Okay. Oh, I got you.
But please don't make it over-politicize it. Make it about global warming or something crazy like that, because that'll ruin it for me.
Right.
Yeah, they're going to stop in the middle of the film and say, recycle your cans.
Well, I hope they don't change his look too much, because sometimes these guys in the art room go crazy and put too many pins.
Right, trying to create more of an amphibian hybrid human thing, which that wasn't what it really was. Well, sort of. It had arms and legs, but I don't know. That would be
one of the things that we have to suffer is
other people's interpretations of what we accept.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you happen to see that new TV show, We Are of Earth, or whatever it's called, I believe it's on TBS.
Yeah, I think
it's
that just started, didn't it? I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. Well, you got to watch that, because it's not based on special effects. The aliens and stuff are in actual real cheesy outfits. And it's hilarious, you know?
The commercials for it look absolutely hysterical.
It is. It's hysterical, and, you know, the special effects are not there, you know? I mean, it's more based on bad acting or whatever, but, you know, it's more entertaining to me instead of them having, you know, these computer-generated aliens, you know?
Yeah, they've done it to death, starting with V on television, or actually starting with The Invaders back in the 60s. Of these shows where, you know, they're coming to take over or kill us or whatever, and that
sounds
like a fun show. Actually,
like The Invaders, the show. I don't remember all the special effects though.
Yeah.
If there were any, did they?
There were optical effects, because I know that when one of the aliens got killed, they sort of glowed, turned red, and then disappeared, and there was like a pile of ash or something.
Right.
Yeah.
Erasing. Film.
That's the same with Bigfoot poop. After they poop, it turns red and then disappears. That's why nobody can find any scat of the Bigfoot. It turns red.
You know,
red.
That keeps me awake at night is the lack of Bigfoot scat. That has always troubled
me. the mystery is now withdrawn.
Yeah. Well, it's very biodegradable.
It would have to be.
So, Louie, you don't call that often, and thanks for calling Erie House Radio and supporting old Dale Kay here, but something I ask my guests, let's step outside of just practical effects, but as far as science fiction and horror, one of each, something that you would call straight horror, what's your favorite, and what would your favorite science fiction movie of all time be?
Okay, straight horror, there was a Liv Tyler movie called The Strangers, I believe.
Ooh.
It was just, it's maybe 7-8 years old.
Yeah.
But not a lot of great special effects, but it was just horror up the ass. I mean, just, you know.
I have not seen it, but I will confess today while I was doing research for this show, I was watching a few things on YouTube and a few other things just to remind myself of some of the films I'd seen. They brought up one reviewer felt that The Strangers was one of the best all time at using practical effects.
That movie, I mean, my wife will not watch it. She watched it once. She will not watch it again.
That's what you know.
When was this
made? Good
this
as
Stranger well. Movie film.
Oh, I would say
it's not that
maybe,
old. About yes,
maybe
years
10
now.
Years old.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But it was just about a couple in a cabin in the woods, and these strangers come up to the house, and they just terrify these people. It was bad. You know.
Yeah, the images that I saw while doing my research, it intrigued me and moved itself up to the I need to see this list.
Yes, yes, it's a must-see for pure terror.
I'm still catching up on films I've always wanted to see, but there's so much new stuff I'm way, way, way behind on.
And science fiction?
Yeah.
That's a hard one to say. Would it be a scare factor science fiction or science fiction of today, like
science fiction of any kind. Science fiction of any kind. Open the door.
I would have to say that Star Trek is the best science fiction creation ever. You know, if you want to go by series or movie. You know,
as
because
a franchise, that and Star Wars are probably the biggest two. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I would say that Star Trek brought in so much stuff that we're using today. You know, like you don't go to a store anymore without the doors opening for you.
That's true.
You know, I wouldn't even be calling you now if I didn't have this handheld communicator. You know.
There you go.
The things that series or product, whatever you want to call it, because there were movies and series, they just brought out all kinds of things, you know, that we're using today.
Yeah. Well, and
you
the
know,
pure science fiction end of it was good, too, because it brought up many issues, things to think about with space travel, with the potential of meeting other life forms. That show was a groundbreaker in so many ways, and it had a good mix of optical effects when they showed the space travel versus the practical
right.
effects,
right.
you know, for
some,
all the scenes with the actors.
Some on it is kind of stupid. Like, I mean, they're on a ship and they're just walking around. There's gravity. Until we can figure out how to do that on a ship, I mean, we're lost.
There you go.
You know, but the things that came to realization during those movies that we're using today is, you know, just totally phenomenal.
Well, absolutely. that show inspired so many things. I saw something on the History Channel where guys were even working for NASA were inspired to do what they do by Star Trek.
Yeah.
You know, they're of the
yeah.
age now where they're the big-time programmers and creators down at NASA.
Right,
and
I believe that was on the 50-year special of Star Trek.
Well, you're probably right.
Gene Roddenberry that was in constant contact with NASA in the day, and he was trying to promote real science in the original 1960s series.
Mm-hmm. And Roddenberry, there'll never be another guy like him, I'm sure.
No.
We're waiting for these people to mature before we die.
Absolutely.
The ones that are gonna be the next Roddenberries.
Yep. And let me remind our live listeners at this late hour that you can go to Erie House Television at 8 o'clock and see Weirdness, Really Bad Movie, host Moon of the Wolf, and then me, Dale Kay, with Mad Monster, starring Glenn Strange and George Zucco. That's at 10, and those are both Eastern Standard Time, if you happen to
know. Oh, man, that's way past my bedtime.
Getting old, are you?
Oh, real old.
It's not the years, it's the
mileage. I got
tired of
getting old. I'm getting young again.
That's right.
Yeah, we all wish until we wake up in the morning.
I refuse to grow up.
Yeah.
So how about this?
I refuse to grow up.
Far from the special effects dialogue, is there a horror movie that would be centrist to Thanksgiving holiday?
Is there a horror movie that what?
That would be, what would be a good word? That would be related to the Thanksgiving holiday.
There was one called Thanksgiving.
There's one called Thanksgiving. That has
yes.
that had to be like after 1970.
Yes, and then it might be the same film. I remember something with some kind of killer turkeys or something like that. Awful. Absolutely
okay, I'm
awful.
Liking that one. Oh
but,
boy.
But they're out there.
Ah, killer turkeys.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. Mm. Okay.
And I think you're right. They're from the 80s. Well,
we've
got
yeah.
about 30 seconds left, fellas. Thank you both so much, Gar the Ghoul and Screwy Louie, for calling in to Erie House Radio. Appreciate it very much.
Oh, it was my pleasure. I'd love to call again sometime.
Always please a pleasure. Blah, blah.
Every Saturday at 6:30 Eastern. And, again, if you want to just listen, there's links on the Facebook pages, or call us at 646-378-0264. Well, that does it for this week, gang. We'll see you next week at the same time, or hear you anyway, right here on Erie House Radio. Thanks, and stay scatty.
Hear you later.
Bye-bye.
Live, live.
Good night, all.